Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. As I mentioned before, there were reports this morning that Israel did, in fact, strike back at Iran. We're being told these were limited strikes, and they were in a province of Iran which houses a nuclear facility. Now, I will make mention here that this is on the heels of several world leaders and several American politicians basically begging Israel not to respond, begging Israel not to retaliate. But I think it's clear now that Bibi is done taking advice from really any of these diplomats, even though, Jared, as you told me earlier, Antony Blinken is in Italy. He's in Capri, and he is commenting on this. This is part of a G7 summit. I'm always amazed how many of these summits they have. It's like every single... That's why I loved recently a piece, I think it was in The Federalist, that went through the schedule of all these climate summits and talked about how many there are in all these different places all over the world and how much, you know, your carbon footprint would have to be to make all of these. But this summit was not about climate. This was about the Middle East. And that is where Antony Blinken is today. But I wanted to read you guys Bibi Netanyahu's recent statement before this strike. He said, Israel will do whatever it needs to defend itself. Foreign leaders have all sorts of suggestions and advice. I appreciate that. But I want to be clear, our decisions we will make ourselves. And of course, as that's happening in Israel, in Iran, we also have very little information about Rob Malley. Remember Rob Malley? He was the Biden administration's Iran czar. There's an excellent piece, and I was trying as hard as I could today to get John Schindler, who wrote this piece. He's actually a National Security Agency. He served with them as a senior intelligence analyst. He has a piece about Rob Malley that I think it's in the Washington Examiner. I included it in my recommended reading today. I just think it lays out what a sketchy character this guy is. This White House, every time you think it can't get worse, you'll read something like this. Okay, so we had heard about Rob Malley, and it seemed like more information was coming out about this person, and then it kind of stopped. So I want to read you just a couple lines here. We can get your reactions. Iran's decision to launch hundreds of drones and missiles at Israel last weekend offers a painful lesson for President Joe Biden. His policy of hoping to induce better behavior from the Islamic Republic through multi-billion-dollar payoffs has been revealed as naive fiction. Now, then he goes into talking about the Obama administration, because one thing that a lot of people who are far more knowledgeable on this issue than I am, like Ben Weingarten, Ari Hoffman, one thing they'll always tell you is that you need to understand just how much footsie the Obama administration was playing with Iran and just how much this was a huge part of their agenda. And what I was happy about when reading this is he does bring up Ben Rhodes, because this is a story that Howie always talks about, or he used to at least when I first started here. Ben Rhodes was the mastermind, the like architect behind the Iran nuclear deal. And he actually bragged at one point about how he was able to sell this to the media and how dumb people in the media were. And like, it wasn't that hard because it's a bunch of college kids with bow ties who you're able to just, you know, win over by telling them a bunch of nonsense. He was openly bragging about it. He boasted in 2016 that the administration has misrepresented the 2015 Iran nuclear accord to the public, selling Tehran as more trustworthy than they were. Rhodes added that this was no problem because the media were idiots who were easily fooled. On that front, Ben Rhodes was absolutely right. Fact check, true. Rhodes was so anti-Israel that his nickname in the Obama White House was Hamas. Let of nicknames flying around these White Houses. So in the Obama White House, they called Ben Rhodes Hamas. And in the Biden White House, they called Trump Hitler Pig. These are all just things that I like to know, Jared. They add a little bit of color to everything. You know, they give you these little details. As the Middle East threatens to explode into a wider war, it needs to be asked how we got to the strange place where the White House considers it's more important to military restrain our ally Israel than our enemy Iran, which has regularly denounced America as the great Satan back to 1979. So here's where we get to Rob Malley. We talked about Rob Malley a couple months ago, and then the story just kind of faded away. Like you didn't hear anything about it. He was the Obama-Biden go-to guy on Iran. Malley holds far-left views on foreign policy, especially the Middle East, that were considered fringe even among Democrats a generation ago, but are now deemed normal. I think probably talking about them like openly was deemed fringe, but I don't think holding them deep inside your heart was deemed fringe. I think there's a lot of things that we pretend now like, oh, moderate Democrats find this, you know, it's slowly come into fashion. It's slowly come into vogue to be pro-Hamas. I think it's been simmering for a while. Malley worked for President Bill Clinton, then served on the National Security Council during Obama's second term as the Mueller whisperer. Malley was the driving force behind the Iran deal and the Iran nuclear deal. And once President Donald Trump killed the Iran deal in 2018, Biden brought Malley back to the White House in 2021 expressly to resurrect it. So he was helping with the Iran deal. Donald Trump came in and said, this is horrible. What are we doing? Why are we trying to appease and enrich Iran when they want to kill us, the great Satan? Let's end this. And then when Biden got back into office, he was like, remember that guy? Remember that guy? He wanted to give pallets of cash to Iran. Let's bring him back. I liked him a lot. I want to take him to Wawa. The other reason the Iran deal isn't coming back is because Malley's no longer in the White House. Plus, as Schindler points out, Iran and Israel are in basically an open war at this point. In April 2023, Malley was quietly placed on leave when his security clearances were suspended by the State Department for unspecified reasons. Malley claimed not to know what the problem was. You guys think you have a problem with me? That's weird. And professed that he'd hope to return to the White House eventually. In the meantime, he had a soft landing at Princeton University, where I'm sure all of his experience and all of his great ideas and his moral compass, I'm sure it is embraced at Princeton University. I'm sure he's with like-minded people. One year has gone by, and we still don't know why Malley's long government career came to a screeching halt over some security issue. There are tells. His case was handed from Foggy Bottom over to the FBI for investigation, which means it's no longer a State Department internal matter since espionage may be involved. Efforts by Congress to get answers about the Malley affair led nowhere. In the meantime, it's only gotten worse. Semaphore exposed an Iranian influence operation going back to 2014 called the Iran Experts Initiative, which featured Mullah-friendly operatives who were supposed to steer U.S. policy toward Iran in ways Tehran wanted. Several of those involved IEI were close associates of Malley. So there's a think tank full of basically spies. And this is all happening in the Biden White House. And it's a giant scandal that no one wants to go near, except for maybe like occasionally Semaphore, occasionally some of these other outliers in the media. But nobody wants to go near the fact that the Mueller whisperer was part of the Biden administration. And then his security clearance comes to a halt. He goes to Princeton University, and it's like, add this to the list. I should keep a list on my phone. The list of mysteries of things we will never get to the bottom of. And I'm telling you right now, if this were during the Donald Trump administration, we would know everything about this guy. And I bet most Americans have never heard of him. Couldn't pick him out of a lineup. But if it were during the Donald Trump administration and there was a scandal involving somebody's security clearance and a spy ring operation, that would be a story. Of course, there was a scandal with a spy ring operation, but it was spying on Donald Trump. So, again, wasn't a big story in the media. 844-500-4242. We will take your calls when we come back. We are going to talk about this. And also, I have an update for you on one of our favorite guys. He hasn't been in the news as much lately, Bob Menendez. There's rumors that Bob Menendez, and this is really, Jared, the thing that upsets me when couples are under the spotlight and in a little bit of legal trouble in a lot of cases. Think of Fannie Willis, Nathan Wade. I worry sometimes that certain lovebirds are not able to withstand the pressure and the scrutiny that comes with the trials and the tribulations of their lives. And I really thought that Bob and Nadine were different. I thought they were in love. Like, we read a story about how he proposed. He got her this giant ring. He kind of got swindled with the ring and, you know, bamboozled. And it wasn't what she wanted. But got a ring, got her a Mercedes. You know, the halal guy's involved. He's doing everything he can to win this woman over. He's singing her karaoke songs. He's really just, like, wearing his heart in his sleeve. Then I hear that there's rumors that if he takes a stand, that he's going to basically sell her out. He's going to flip. He's going to flip on this woman who was the love of his life. And I just didn't think he was that kind of guy. I thought he was made of tougher stuff. I thought he was someone that we could trust. And I'm going to give you more details on this because the word they used, maybe I'm just, you know, I'm always working on my vocabulary, but sometimes a word pops up and I'm like, I don't know what that means. And this is one where I probably should know what it means, but it said, his lawyers say, they kept saying he might inculpate her. And I was like, I got to do a Google search on this. I got the gist of what it meant, but I wanted to get the definition. Accuse, blame, incriminate. I like those better. If I'm writing a story, I would just prefer to use that term. He's going to blame her. How about this? Even better term, he's going to throw his wife under the bus. He's going to throw his wife under the Mercedes convertible in order to hopefully get out of a bind, which, by the way, I don't think it's going to work. We'll talk about this when we come back. 844-500-4242. Don't go anywhere.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone. Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is what issue do you think young voters care the most about? The economy, student loan debt, the Middle East, abortion, climate change, or illegal immigration?
Yeah, according to recent polls, this is the Harvard Youth Poll, so it's among people ages 18 to 29. It shows that Biden leads Trump 45% to 37%, which might seem like a lot, but in 2020, Biden was leading Trump by 23 percentage points among young people. So there's definitely been a dip. He does trounce Trump when it comes to the higher educated set. See Columbia University, and that might make sense to you. It also says Biden's margin widens when the pool is restricted to registered and likely voters. But still, his 19-point lead over Trump among the voters under 30 is significantly smaller than his 30-point advantage this time 4 years ago. So what's changed? Well, that's where we get to these options. Jared, I'm going to vote for the economy because I've noticed, and what I would throw into the economy, because it's, you know, a huge part of it, is the housing market. I've noticed among young people, especially like I would say 25 to 35, people are getting very frustrated about their living situations and how hard it is to find a house and how hard it is to pay a mortgage. And that obviously is a direct result of this economy that Joe Biden, for the record, keeps going around and bragging about. So I'm going to vote the economy. What are you going to vote, Jared?
I was going to say abortion, because that really usually resonates with younger voters, but that's only at 7%. The economy is in the lead at 29%. Climate change and illegal immigration are tied at 21%, 19% for student loan debt, and just 2% for the Middle East.
Yeah, this is a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School. He said economic issues are top of mind. Housing is a major concern, and the gap between young men's and young women's political preferences is pronounced. Now, there's questions about third-party candidates and what that's going to do to Joe Biden's margins. And at least according to this story in Politico, it says third-party candidates threaten to erode Biden's margins, putting more data behind a scenario Democrats have long feared. I, for some reason, don't think that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be damaging to Joe Biden. Like, I from what I've seen, and maybe I'm just going based off the Kennedys who have come out and endorsed Biden and kind of almost like denounced RFK Jr., not in those words, but they might as well have. I get the sense that moderate Democrats do not like RFK Jr., that they think he's wacky and radical and a conspiracy theorist. And in a weird way, he has some viewpoints that they associate with Trump people. So I'm not so sure about the third party candidates, but I definitely think that the young people right now are focused on the economy. They're focused on housing. They're focused on the fact that things have gotten a lot harder. I was talking to my cousin yesterday and we were talking about interest rates, and she said, yeah, you know, you refinance down the line and this and that. And she said, but people are saying it's never going to go back to what it was under Trump at this point. Like, everything's so hot right now. So, Jared, what's the number one, the economy?
The economy is number one at 29%.
Okay, we'll keep you guys up to date on how this changes. Now, Gold Bar Bob Menendez's wife tells friends she will go to prison because of a cash crisis.
I love gold!
Bob Menendez's wife has confided in her friends, and clearly they're very, very trustworthy because they told the New York Post that she's convinced she will go to prison because she's short of money for legal representation. Now, there are rumors out there that her husband, who lewdly nicknamed her Bubbles over her cleavage, ick, has a legal defense fund that has already paid for an expert witness for his case and much of her legal costs. But lawyers are saying he might try to incriminate his wife if push comes to shove. A bombshell secret filing was unsealed in which Menendez's attorney said that if he takes the stand in his own defense, his evidence could inculpate Nadine. Can you imagine, Jared? Like, the lengths this guy went to give her everything in the world. And now he's going to sell her out to try to keep his own ass out of prison for the second time in just a few years. Some hubby he is. We'll be right back. We got a lot more to get to. And we're going to talk Stephen A. Smith with his latest take on Donald Trump that has the internet ablaze. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Just because I can't leave these on the cutting room floor, I need everyone to hear this. Yesterday, we spent a great deal of time talking about Joe Biden's cannibal story. If you missed it, go listen to the podcast, and you're in for a treat. Joe Biden was talking about his Uncle Bosie, whose plane went down, and then during World War II, and then it was near New Guinea. And if you read between the lines, he basically says, like, oh, yeah, and then he was eaten by cannibals. Now, the Daily Mail put up a post, right, and they said, it's from outraged Papua New Guinea academics who are lashing out at Joe Biden for his unacceptable suggestion that cannibals ate his World War II pilot uncle. Not a headline I would think I'd be reading during a presidential campaign. Like, I did not have this on my bingo card. And this is the quote from the academics. They wouldn't just eat any white men that fell from the sky. David Berg wrote back to this and said, oh, great. Now he's lost the cannibal academics community.
You're white, then you've been Affleck.
How's he going to recover from this? How is he going to recover from this? Oh, Ari Hoffman's on the line right now. Let's grab him. Let's put him up. Ari Hoffman from the post-millennial and famed radio host out of Seattle joins us now. He's always such a great resource when it comes to the Israel-Hamas conflict. Ari, before we get into these protests, these riots at Columbia University, I would love your response to Israel striking back at Iran. What do you make of that? What do we know so far about these, what they're calling limited strikes?
We know very, very little so far, and it's always a pleasure to be here, Grace. But basically what this was is, remember that Iran shot over 300 ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones, suicide drones, at Israel, and almost all of them got shot down by Israel, the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, and their allies. So Iran didn't really accomplish anything. But meanwhile, what did happen was Israel was able to show Iran, hey, if you guys keep messing with us, we can park an airplane right outside of your territorial airspace and destroy whatever you want. We know that the strikes were near some of their nuclear facilities and other sensitive facilities, and this was pretty much a don't screw with us because we can actually hit targets and you can't.
Yeah, the other part of this, Ari, I wanted to ask you about is that Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, is in Italy at this G7 conference. And here's a quote. He said, our focus has been on, of course, making sure that Israel can effectively defend itself, but also de-escalating tensions and avoiding conflict. What do you make of the Biden White House's response and really this pressure on Israel not to escalate the situation, not to respond, and as John Kirby said, just to enjoy the success and the fact that their defense systems worked over the weekend?
That's a ridiculous statement by the Biden administration. It shows how clueless they are. Let's remember, this whole thing started because Iran gave Hamas the go-ahead on October 7th to do what they did. Let's remember, they were actually holding them back because this was supposed to be, October 7th was supposed to be a year ago. It was supposed to be on the Passover holiday, and Iran said, no, now's not the time, and then gave them the go-ahead. Iran funds Hezbollah. Iran funds Hamas. This is on them, and the Biden administration funds Iran. The Biden administration was so desperate to get Iran back into the Iran nuclear accords, which were failure, which we saw how that worked out in North Korea, where Bill Clinton said, oh, we'll just pay you not to develop nuclear weapons, and look what happened, is that now you have Iran with billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars, which they got from Obama, which they got from Biden, which they didn't get under Trump, which is now using it to spend on terror. And look what happened to the Middle East because of this failed foreign policy. And let's remember that Biden also gave the go-ahead to Iran to launch those missiles. So now you have the U.S. and its allies spending billions of dollars on weapons to defend Israel when Joe Biden gave the go-ahead for Iran to launch that strike. And then he tries to hold back Israel. I mean, the world is on fire thanks to Joe Biden.
Ari, the world is on fire, and it seems like a lot of people are just cheering it on. We had protests at Columbia University yesterday. It seems like they've gone into today. Some students were arrested. Some were suspended. Some people were joining in, cheering, "We are Hamas, death to America," things of that nature that we've obviously heard at this point in a lot of these different riots that are going on. I would love your response to this. What's your reaction to, and I don't want to generalize and say it's all the young people, but most of these protesters seem to be young. They seem to be very radical. What do you make of this, and where did this problem start?
This is nothing new. I've been saying since the beginning of this, these aren't pro-Palestinian protests. These are pro-Hamas protests. We've seen it. They're carrying the flags, wearing the keffiyehs. We saw people wearing Hezbollah gear. We saw them waving Hezbollah flags. I mean, where do you even get that? Does Amazon sell Hezbollah flags? I'm not going to Google that and find out if that's what happens. But when they're chanting this stuff, it's obvious. When your enemies tell you who they are, believe them. And something that I noticed on the left today, you start seeing the squad call them anti-war demonstrators. That's not what they are. They're calling for the exact opposite. They're trying to make this seem like the 1960s, because Colombia in the 1960s had similar sit-ins, similar protests, and similar arrests. They're trying to make it seem like it's Vietnam War. That's not what it is. These are the people literally calling for the death of Jews who are supporting terrorist organizations.
Yeah, one thing we talked about yesterday was the president of Colombia was asked about the chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And she tried to respond in a way that, oh, well, some Jewish people don't find that offensive, and, you know, trying to kind of skirt the issue. I wanted to have you on, Ari, so that you could explain that chant to people and what it really means. And there seems to be this attempt to sugarcoat it from people in the media and in some cases these professors or these presidents of these universities. But as a Jewish person, when you hear that, what do you hear?
It's not offensive. It's a call for genocide. So, I mean, I don't think offensive is the right word. That sounds like something a lefty would say. I'd say somebody's calling for my death. And too many times in Jewish history, we have seen like things like that before, where people call for our deaths. And what happens is that then they actually act on it. These are people who came on October 7th and came trying to kill as many Jews as possible, kidnapped a whole bunch of Jews, raped a whole bunch of Jews. Like I said, when your enemies tell you who they are, believe them. From the river to the sea means from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. And what they're calling for is not a two-state solution. They're calling for an end of Israel, but not just Jews who live there, but Israeli Arabs, Israeli Christians, Druze, anybody else who lives there. They want them all wiped out and all gone. They can sugarcoat it as much as they want, but we know what their real intent and real messaging is.
Ari, do you think that in Israel, Bibi Netanyahu and other military experts are affected by what seems like a pressure campaign from world leaders for them to not respond or to respond in, you know, a very soft way? I saw a statement from Bibi Netanyahu where he said foreign leaders have all sorts of suggestions and advice. I appreciate that, but I want to be clear. Our decisions we will make ourselves. Do you think that's true? Do you think that a lot of people in Israel are on board for that and are behind this idea of we can make our own decisions? We don't need support from Joe Biden or from the United States of America?
It's half true. What Israel does with the aid they get is they buy American weaponry. If all of a sudden America said you can't buy our weaponry anymore, Israel's got a problem. The very good problem they have right now is ammo supply. They get a whole bunch of their ammo from the U.S. Now, Israel builds their own tanks. They modify U.S. fighter jets when they get them. But ammo is something that they get specifically from the U.S. and other sources. If that was to be cut off, Israel would be in trouble. And one thing that this conflict has taught a lot of people in Israel is they are actually tired of relying on the U.S., tired of relying on other countries, and they're saying enough of this nonsense. Nobody else has to do this. So they're trying to find ways to not have to be reliant on the U.S. anymore for that kind of stuff, so they don't have to keep going down this road where, if God forbid, there's another terrorist organization that wants to take down Israel, Israel doesn't have to worry about what the U.S. or anybody else says and can just take care of business.
Now, Ari, I'm just going to switch gears here really quick because I have to find out what you think about Joe Biden's campaigning at the moment. He's been stopping by these gas stations, these Wawas in Pennsylvania. He has been, you know, doing some campaigning in front of these step-in repeats and telling stories about how his uncle was eaten by cannibals. And then, just to juxtapose it, you have Donald Trump, who in between these court appearances is going to Harlem, is going to places in New York City. Not something that a lot of people expected, but I think he's just trying to make the most out of the fact that he already has to be there. What do you think about this? And is this visual of these two presidents, is it as striking as conservatives are making it out to be? Is this going to affect independent voters who are seeing these two guys operating in very different ways?
Yeah, I actually think it's a huge contrast. Look, you knew when Bill Clinton went to a McDonald's that he was trying to get away from Hillary Clinton and wanting a cheeseburger, and a lot of people could identify with that. But it seems that whenever Donald Trump goes somewhere, the Biden campaign sets up an impromptu event where Joe Biden wanders in, wanders out, and nobody's really that excited to see him. I mean, Joe Biden had a clip today. I don't know if you played it on your show, but we had a clip on my show today where we're talking about how Joe Biden is saying that he gets the middle finger from little kids and how he gets cussed out by little kids. That's not exactly portraying that people are happy to see you where you go when you're campaigning. I think it comes off as just trying to do what Donald Trump does and not being effective at it.
Yeah, I really well said. And I did see that cut. I mean, there's so many things. And one of the comments, Ari, beneath one of the videos of Joe Biden rambling on, a guy said, everything he says sounds like some cryptic message being given by somebody on their deathbed at the beginning paragraph of a murder mystery. I think that sums it up pretty well.
It absolutely does. That's hysterical. But also, let's remember, he also keeps telling these lies that never happened. I mean, his great-grandfather or grandfather getting eaten by cannibals or something. I mean, these stories just never happened. You wonder where Hunter Biden got all the lying from? It seems like it's genetic. Joe Biden has been doing this his entire career. The left has been letting him get away with it. They're still letting him get away with it. Where's the Washington Post with their Pinocchios, with their fact check? Oh, no, we only bring those out for Donald Trump and Republicans. The stark contrast between the two is so obvious to anybody who wants to see it. Joe Biden's rambling lies have been disproven 100 times, and every time he gets up there, they say with vigor, oh, look how vigorous he is. You don't have to say that about somebody who's actually vigorous. You call somebody like that spry. That, you don't give that definition to Donald Trump, and he's pretty close in age to Joe Biden. It's not an age thing. It's how with it you are, and clearly Joe Biden's not with us anymore.
Yeah, that's a really good point, is that when someone's vigorous or spry, you don't have to say it. It's like when someone's a tough guy, you don't have to say you're a tough guy. We would just be able to tell. And the other thing I would say is you can say that about tippers. Whenever someone tells me they're a generous tipper, I'm like, you don't need to tell me that. Like, that's just something that you keep quiet. But that's another thing. Joe Biden goes to the Wawa, Ari, and he hands the cashier. He goes, and here's a tip for you, because I know the rest is covered and paid for. It's like so uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's clearly all staged. That whole thing with the Wawa was clearly staged. Anybody who wants to see it can see it. But the problem is this has now become a Rorschach test. People see what they want to see. They look at Joe Biden, they go, well, he's not Donald Trump. Or they look at Donald Trump and go, well, I hate the mean tweets. I hate the attitude. I hate the indictments. But I had more money in my wallet. But the world wasn't on fire. But you know what? My kids were safer and police were respected and the world was a better place. I mean, that's really what you're looking at this election season.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Ari Hoffman, thank you so much for joining us today. We always appreciate it. Ari, let people know where they can follow you. Oh, and actually, Ari, before you do that, can I ask for a little update? Last time we talked, there was a situation with illegal immigrants on a tennis court in Seattle, kind of taking over, setting up encampments, and it was land connected to a high school there. Is there any update on that?
Oh, sure. So Seattle said, no, we're not paying your bills anymore. And they went to another. So they went back to the hotel they were staying in, and somebody picked up the tab. We don't know who. Well, literally just yesterday, King County, which is the county that Seattle is in, decided to spend $2 million on illegal immigrants. So while sanity may be restored or coming back to Seattle very, very slowly, King County, the county which Seattle is in, unfortunately is doubling down on the failed policies of the past and only incentivizing this behavior more.
Of course, naturally. That's just the way things go now. Ari, tell people where they can follow you and find you and where they can listen to you.
Absolutely. At The Hoffather on Twitter, Ari Hoffman Official on Facebook and Instagram. They can read my stuff over at The Post Millennial, and they can listen to me at KVI.com.
Thank you very much, sir. Yeah, I love that. Everything Joe Biden says sounds like some cryptic message being given by somebody on their deathbed at the beginning paragraph of a murder mystery. Yeah, but just like a little bit more convoluted with a couple of details in there that make no sense. But in general, yes, I think that's an accurate description. Thank you, Ari Hoffman. We'll take more calls when we come back. And you know what, Jared? I want to talk about Stephen Smith and something that he said that's gone viral. And I feel as though Stephen Smith is in your wheelhouse of people that you could tell us about interactions with.
Yeah, I was his producer at ESPN for 2 years when he was on the radio, actually.
Okay, there we go. Name drop time featuring Jared Diglio.
Name drop.
He'll give us the inside scoop on Stephen A. Smith, who was on Hannity of all places last night, if you can believe that. Listen up, everyone. You've waited through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. Now the longer, warmer days are finally on their way. And I love the sunshine. I love when we're on the other side of things. We're heading into the summer and the warmth. But it also means pollen. It also means, you know, pollutants in the air. And you want to eliminate those. So you want the thunderstorm. And the great thing is, if you go to EdenPureDeals.com and you use code GRACE3, you can get the 3-pack. Finally, you're looking forward to opening your windows to let that fresh air in your home or in your car. But you don't want the sneezing to start. The Eden Pure eliminates allergens and pollutants in the air. It's small, it doesn't take up floor space, it works quickly, and it works quietly, which I love. With a thunderstorm, you can enjoy this beautiful time of year without having to reach for the tissues, and you can enjoy the 3-pack, which helps you save money. So the 3-pack special is such a great deal, and here's how I want you to take advantage of it. Go to EdenPureDeals.com, use code GRACE and the number 3, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
This just in, a man has set himself on fire near the Trump courthouse. We were actually just discussing this hush money trial in New York City and the way it could affect the election, the way it could affect people's perception of Trump. And that actually brings us to this sound cut from Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. Smith, he's very familiar with the feeling of ruffling feathers, Jared. He goes viral a lot for driving people crazy, for having hot takes, different opinions, but he doesn't always weigh into politics, or not as often as he weighs into sports. Take a listen to what he had to say about Donald Trump's court cases.
But I got to tell you something. As much as people may have been abhorred by Donald Trump's statement weeks ago, talking about how black folks, he's hearing that black folks find him relatable because what he's going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. He was telling the truth. When you see the law enforcement, the court system and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to with some of our historic, iconic figures. We've seen that happen throughout society. So no matter what race, what ethnicity you may emanate from, we relate to you when you're suffering like that because we know we have. And that's what he articulated. But I got to.
Yeah, he was on with Sean Hannity last night, and that's what he had to say. And if you don't remember that, a couple weeks ago, Donald Trump did say something along those lines, that he thinks the black community can relate to him more, and he was roundly criticized for it. It is one of those things where, you know, if Stephen A. Smith wants to say it, I don't think Trump abides by these rules, that, like, that's something that Stephen A. Smith could say without getting in a lot of trouble, but it's not something Donald Trump can say without getting in a lot of trouble. A lot of people would make that calculation before they'd make a statement like that, but Donald Trump doesn't care about that. Like, Donald Trump's just saying what he sees. He's not going, well, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm a white guy. He's just saying it. And Jared, I am curious, because of your long time at ESPN, what do you make of Stephen A. Smith? Like, is this just his way? Because we know if you're a liberal, if you're, you know, in the mainstream media like he is, and you have even a slightly conservative take, it's a quick way to go viral and to gain fans in the right. Is he just trying to capture that, or do you think he really feels like this?
I think he really feels like this because he's been on Bill Maher. He's been on his own show saying, I am not voting for Donald Trump. I'm not doing that. I can't vote for a guy who's got 91 felony charges. I mean, he has said point blank he is not voting for Donald Trump. So I genuinely believe, but he can look at this situation and he can be like, you know what? Yeah, the guy makes a valid point, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And one thing I hate, though, is like when somebody who's typically on the left makes even a slightly sane remark, they get wet kisses from the right. We all start acting like, oh, Stephen A. Smith said it, so look at this. And but I understand why people are kind of going back to this and making note of how strange it is that some people who hate Donald Trump so much are even able to say this isn't right, what's happening. So a man set himself on fire outside the Trump courthouse. We'll talk to Emma Foley when we come back.
Stay off the weed!